My Family Thinks I'm Crazy, a podcast where I, your host, try to give you some tips on how you can explain all this weird, wild, crazy conspiracy stuff to the people you love most. Because that's what I've been trying to do for the past 10 years with no success. I've been telling everybody that our government is shady, but every time I do, my family thinks I'm crazy. The hollow earth, UFOs, aliens invading, fluoride in the water, they spray our skies daily. When I talk about these things, they think I'm crazy. There's no escaping anymore the evil that we're facing. Illuminati mind control, they're sacrificing babies. The end of days, but anyways, my family thinks I'm crazy.
What, they don't want to listen to you?
No, they don't want to listen. They don't want to hear it. They're just like, oh, here we go, Mark. Off again with your
Mark being Mark again.
Yeah, yeah. So, you know, that's the thing about podcasts is when you're on the air, and it's like therapy, you know. If I can't talk to my family about this stuff, I'll talk to you, Matt, and all our listeners.
You know, just tell your whole podcast.
Yeah. So who are we talking about today, Matt?
So I think what they were able to probably do is find war crimes on him. Then they say, you know, oh, you can go to Nuremberg or you can work for us and do what we tell you. And that seems to have been what happened. Because after that, they arranged this phony escape where he was able to escape to West Germany and then, with the help of British intelligence, get a job over in America in Project Paperclip. And one of the guys that was involved in getting the paperclip scientists over was a guy named Donald McLean, who was one of the Cambridge Five spies. He eventually defected to Moscow in 1951.
You just heard today's guest, author, victim of bioweaponeering, who joins me, Mystic Mark, here on the My Family Thinks I'm Crazy podcast. Thank you for tuning in and enjoy this conversation with Adam Finnegan. All right, ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to the My Family Thinks I'm Crazy podcast. I'm your host, Mystic Mark, and joining me today is a new guest, someone who's here to talk about some things that, well, I think concern all of us, particularly those of us here in the U.S. Adam Finnegan joins us today to talk about some of his work and his experience with, well, I'll let you take it away, Adam, but thanks for joining us. Tell us a little bit about your book and how this all got started.
Right. Hi. Thank you very much for having me on. So my book is called The Sleeper Agent, The Rise of Lyme Disease, Chronic Illness, and the Great Imitator Antigens of Biological Warfare. It looks at the stealth incapacitating agents of biological warfare. These are bioweapons that would cause these slow chronic diseases rather than these heavy fatal, these highly fatal diseases. And I made Lyme disease kind of like the center. It's about way more than just Lyme disease, but Lyme disease is like kind of at the center of it. And especially a Nazi scientist named Eric Traub. And so these bioweapons are made to kind of work slowly over time and completely overwhelm a country. It's that it creates more burden for the country, keeping people alive, but unable to function, unable to work, having neuropsychiatric disorders, all sorts of elements of this come into play. There's cancer. So it can kill you through indirect means like cancer, but typically on their own, they're not fatal. But that's kind of like the I started researching and writing this book after I got sick with Lyme disease around 2016. I had already been familiar with it from a family member. My mother had it in early 2000s, and obviously still to this day she has it, but I was familiar with it from then, and I was also familiar with it because somebody on my hometown street had it when I was growing up. But I had read a book called Lab 257. I'm sure, I don't know if you're aware, if you might, you might remember that book, but it was the first book that kind of made that link to Lyme disease and Eric Traub and Plum Island, that those were connected. And I had read that book in 2006, and I thought it was it left a big impression on me. Then when I got sick in 2016, I decided I wanted to go further into it. So I reached out to this, to the guy that Michael Carroll was talking about in, Lab 257, a guy named John Loftus, who was the first to kind of, he wrote that Lyme disease was the result of biological warfare. But that's kind of the book. It goes into so much more, though. It also goes into vaccines and how these can also cause the same conditions. It also goes into the condition itself that Eric Traub discovered, the kind of like the underpinnings of chronic disease and how to produce this with a certain antigen. And you could put these on many different agents. That's why you'll have a lot of different diseases that create a similar Lyme-like disease. That's basically a summary of what my book's about. And it looks at the different global superpowers that have been involved in this the entire time.
Yeah. I was unfamiliar with Eric Traub, member of the Nazi Party and Nazi Motorist Corp, whatever that is.
Yeah.
Bioweapon facility. He led as a lab chief in the Schutz stuff while I'm reading this off.
Yeah.
But it turns out his alma mater is the Rockefeller Institute for Medical Research. So this must be where he studied before the war. Was he a paperclip character? Did he make it over to
US afterwards? Wow. First he comes over to the Rockefeller Institute from 1932 to 1938. Then he goes back to Germany when the war was about to break out, and he set up there. And there was like this German version of Plum Island over there called Insel Reims. It's like at the northernmost tip of Germany. It's so Eric Traub, he was a veterinarian, but the veterinarians make the best bioweaponeers because they understand the whole zoonosis thing. They understand a diverse number of different immune systems, and they understand he particularly was skilled in the art of adaptation and modifying pathogens using different animal passages where you could run it through different animals a number of times and get it to mutate a certain way. This is how bioengineering was done before the days of recombinant DNA technology. So being a veterinarian, it was a big thing when it came to bioweaponeering. Wow. And that's why. And what he did also is turning, because people look at him and say, oh, he just looked, you know, he just worked on foot and mouth disease or whatever. And that's just, you know, bio warfare against cattle. Well, not really. What he was doing was oftentimes he would use the veterinary stuff as kind of like a cover. What he would do is turn the animal diseases to human diseases. He would adapt them to new species. He would adapt them to man. And there would be diseases that have never been seen before in the human.
One thing that strikes me, because it came up in the previous episode to this one, is insects being used as disease vectors. It seems like he was a part of experiments using insect diseases. I think most people think of mosquitoes, when they think of insect-borne diseases, obviously ticks and Lyme disease, but in reference to this recent episode, they were talking about co-opting insects for more than just being a disease vector, but actually creating a sort of a programmable insect that they could then, I would imagine that would be better suited for maybe surveillance purposes, but who knows, maybe as disease vectors too. And that was a NASA article that referenced using insects, co-opted insects for various purposes, whether weaponry and that sort of thing. So yeah, mm-hmm. Interesting. So, okay. With this gentleman, I'm just brushing through his Wikipedia page. One side note, he's buried underneath a black obelisk for all of our symbolism heads. I mean, if that doesn't scream suspicious to anyone, I mean, do some research. But black obelisks, very strange. You said he was working on Germany's sort of Plum Island, Reims.
Yeah.
Did he actually make his way over to Plum Island at some point?
Yeah, I do have him. There are several times. I mean, they definitely were planning on putting him there since the very beginning, because in the 1948 hearing on establishing a foot and mouth disease lab, they talked about him specifically. They didn't mention him by name, but they mentioned him by things that I recognized were talking about him. They were planning on putting him there the whole time. He definitely visited there a few times, and they did use Plum Island for veterinary testing since 1944. And there's testimony from the Lab 257 where there, someone who was working there said that they saw a picture of him pointing at Plum Island, pointing to where he released the ticks. And I have the guy John Loftus that I told you about. He actually wrote the introduction to my book. He had talked about how they had released these ticks at Plum Island in his 1982 book, The Belarus Secret. And he had a biodefense source who I had met. They were coming to him because he basically got a lot of the stuff about paperclip declassified, and people were coming to him from the intelligence community asking him if he could get other stuff declassified that they thought the American public should know. And one of the things was this whole incident where Eric Traub was doing testing there. They were running a simulant program. A simulant program is it's like a simulation of a bioterror attack. And so what they would do is they would release bacteria that they say is harmless in the open air. They did this in San Francisco and all over the United States. There's different places where they did this. And then there's another kind of simulant test where they would release what they say are harmless bacteria and insects and release the insects and see how they spread out. But the more I study this, the more I'm thinking it's not really exactly how to, I don't think they're doing this for the only purpose of seeing how it spreads out. It looks to me like this may have been a covert vaccination program. I hate to say it, but that's what it's starting to look like, because this seems to have become a routine part of biodefense activities. And they were assessing what kinds of different vaccine viruses they could use as a standard simulant. I have a document from the 1990s where they were doing this. And it doesn't make sense to continue, spreading out bacteria for decades to see how it spreads out. I mean, you'd probably only need a few different tries and then you could guess how it spreads out. It looks to me like they were putting some of these vaccine antigens on some of these bacteria or using the viruses themselves and spraying it into the environment.
Hmm.
Okay. Yeah. Like they had cleared this, the vaccinia virus as a standard simulant to see how smallpox spreads out, but basically that would basically be like a aerogenic vaccine program.
Yeah, non-consensual prescription of.
And you know about the mosquitoes, how they're talking about using the mosquitoes to vaccinate the population.
Yeah.
How they could genetically engineer the mosquitoes to spread vaccines.
Right.
Well, I personally think that that's what Eric Traub was doing with these ticks now. I didn't say that in my book, but I'm looking at it. The more I look at it, that's kind of like the idea that I'm coming to.
Yeah. Yeah, it's really disturbing. And I mean, as a optimist, I'd like to think that this is all, you know, in the name of defending the population. I don't know, maybe slowly boosting our immune systems over time so another country can't come in and poison us quicker. But it really, I mean, when you see how many people, including yourself, become victims of this, it's obviously not, you know, worth the, you know, I don't know, a phrase is escaping me right now, but it really, yeah, it's just not, it doesn't seem like this is something in our best interests.
No, definitely not.
The Plum Island, people might think, well, it's an island. How do the ticks get off the island, right? I learned this as someone who grew up in Connecticut, where Lyme disease gets its name from Lyme, Connecticut. I guess this is where it was found. But you got to imagine, well, this Plum Island is not too far off the coast. So birds and deer make their way through Long Island Sound, and that's where the ticks spread. And I mean, deer are everywhere on the East Coast, so it's only a matter of time before it gets as far and wide as wherever the deer and birds can travel. So
that's from what I was told. Is they was releasing them on shorebirds, and they had a bird program. It was like part of the biological warfare program. Birds could be used to spread disease to an enemy. They talk about it in the USDA conferences. Eric Traub talked about it in a 1942 paper. He said migratory birds could be used to spread diseases to an enemy. And so that seems to be, he was also traveling back and forth between Colombia and South America and the East Coast, northeast coast of the United States, in parallel with the bird migration patterns, loosely. Like when they would go down, when they were flying south, he would go down to Colombia. When they were flying up north, he'd come back up north. And in the 1960s, they found there was a program called Project Starbright or Operation Starbright. And that program was in the Pacific looking at birds and the way that birds spread disease. But I'm sure they had a program from as far back, and it could have been called a different name. A lot of times they'll have multiple programs doing different things in different places. So I'm not sure that the bird program that he was working under was called Starbright, but I know that eventually Starbright came out as one of the bird programs that we had.
Yeah.
So he was like back and forth between Plum Island. He was stationed in Maryland, but he was also working with the USDA, and the USDA was talking about putting, they were in the process of building the Plum Island facility. But at the time when he was there, 1942, they say that they started officially testing in 1952, then transferred it to the USDA in 1954. But actually, it looks like they were also testing from as far back as 1944, because I do have a book that does say that, called Deadly Cultures. And they were, of course, if it was something that was highly classified, you probably wouldn't see it in the open. Like you wouldn't see them talking about it. So this is something that I've kind of put together using a lot of different circumstantial evidence to make my case. kind of like reverse engineering the story. And what I found is when Eric Traub went back to Germany in 1938 is when he was started to get his expertise in tick-borne disease from his mentor, Carl Beller. His name was Carl Beller, and it was at the University of Gießen, and he was assistant professor to him. And during that year, he was working on these different animal rickettsiosis or rickettsioses. It's rickettsia is like it's an arthropod borne disease or an insect borne disease, often a tick borne disease. And he was teaching him how if you had a multitude of different infections all rolled into one, it creates this very complex condition called immune tolerance. And now I want to back up a little bit here. Is this thing called immune tolerance? This is the Lyme-like disease. That's what it officially became known as. And immune tolerance, it's not a good thing. It's actually where your immune system is so suppressed, it's forced to tolerate harmful pathogens that you should otherwise be keeping out of your body. And when you start tolerizing them, they invade your organs and they invade your central nervous system. And basically, you don't really have a big antibody response, and you don't really have the massive inflammation that you'd see in like an acute disease. It's very low grade, if at all. And it's doing harm to you. It's just not very visible from the outset. And that's like the perfect stealth. So also even routine blood work can come back normal. So it was like this was something that was a very stealth kind of disease. And these were stealth bioweapons, I would say. But looking at it, I'm thinking that he may have been selling them on the idea that this could be used as a vaccine to vaccinate the population against a multitude of different animal, a multitude of different foreign animal diseases and human diseases.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I mean, coming from a group of people who believe they're superior to everyone else, I'm not going. Yeah. My hopes into, you know, them seeing the good for the rest of us. It is very concerning to think that not only were these people allowed to, you know, live on and work in their same careers that they use in, you know, same professions from the Nazi party, that whole organization, institutions all just got transplanted into the United States. I mean, it's stunning. So let's talk a little bit about the effects of these stealth diseases, these stealth weapons, bioweapons. You yourself are a victim of Lyme disease. I know someone growing up, a good friend of mine's mother contracted Lyme disease, and I believe they got past it. I don't know how that works, if it's something you have for life. But yeah, please tell us about your experience with Lyme disease and when you first realized you had it.
Yeah. It's kind of blurry because it's possible that I could have had it my whole life and then gotten like a second dose of it and got really sick, because I did have some sporadic symptoms throughout my life, just not all at once. In 2016, it was like all at once. And I did have a tick bite that year. And it was around that time. It was like the worst headaches you could imagine that never go away. Your brain kind of feels numb and tingly, and your forehead feels numb and tingly. Joint pain, stiffness. I remember I was vomiting at one point. You just feel like you've been poisoned. That's like a good way that I could describe it. You just feel awful. It's just like someone poisoned you or something. And I started kind of like looking, joining different Lyme disease groups. I had joined this group, this Facebook group called Truth Cures, run by this woman who, she used to work for Pfizer and she was a chem analyst, and she got Lyme disease and got really sick. And she started this group because she found all sorts of nonsense going on with the public health system and why a lot of people will be infected, but they're told that they're not. And she's actually the one who taught me about this condition called immune tolerance. And I started to learn that, and I started to realize what it is. It's basically, also, when you get this immunosuppression that happens, you get all of these reactivated latent viruses from within your body that kind of come back online and start destroying you from head to toe. And it's like, so when I started looking into Eric Chaub, I was really surprised because I found out he actually discovered it. And so he discovered it at the Rockefeller Institute in the 1930s. What he was trying to do was he was trying to see if he could reactivate a dormant virus from within these mice. So he injected foreign proteins into the mouse's brain, or foreign antigens into the mouse's brain, causing this like septic shock or something. But it didn't kill them. It left them with this slow chronic disease. And all of the infected females would pass that on to their young. And he found, so he reactivated this virus from within this mouse colony. It spread to the entire colony after that. And what he did was he was creating an epidemic from scratch. And if you think about it, it's basically done in the same way that you could do that, the same thing with a vaccine. I mean, yes, they were intercerebral inoculations, so he was injecting the mice right into their brains, but the same does happen with routine vaccines. Oftentimes you'll see people have reactivation of Epstein-Barr virus or chickenpox or a lot of those common herpes viruses. So he was basically like, okay, he started to study these mice over the course of 4 years while he was at Rockefeller. That was like his main thing. It was the virus that he reactivated he found it was called lymphocytic chorioamnionitis virus, or LCM virus. And it would pass down through generations. And he noticed that the mice would look normal at first, but then they would come down with these slow wasting diseases, prion diseases. Kind of like mad cow is a prion disease, but that's like a highly fatal one that's like very quick. But there's slower ones that are much more drawn out. And that's also what like Alzheimer's is. These wasting diseases, you have these things, these amyloids that are slowly destroying your brain. And he also noticed that the cancer rate would skyrocket. And the weird thing was, he didn't say anything about it when he was at Rockefeller, but when he went back to Germany, he published a paper on it and said that while he was at the Rockefeller Institute, all of these mice were coming down with these cancers. The cancer was skyrocketing in these colonies. So it's like later on, our American public health system is looking at immune tolerance as an acceptable form of immunity. But if you actually go look at the history of immune tolerance, it's actually just horrifying, because you're basically destroying the immune system and then you're bringing on these slow chronic wasting diseases and cancers to replace that. In 2012, the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, along with NIH and some other NGOs, were funding. There was a paper they funded called Disease Tolerance as a Defense Strategy. And that's how I realized they were looking at it from the standpoint of how, okay, we can use this to protect the population, but it doesn't make any sense to do that. Because when you look at long, and then to have absolutely no backup plan for, and if you were going to do that, you'd have, they had no backup plan to deal with this cascade of what I call the dark triad of immune tolerance: chronic disease, neuropsychiatric disorders, and cancers. Those are the three things that happen when you induce this immune tolerance, not all at the same time, but there are three kind of like rebound effects that occur. And it looks to me like in 2019, when this whole COVID thing happened, it looks like when they started making that COVID vaccine, they were trying to induce that in the population. So for a virus like that, it's just like, it just doesn't make any sense to do that, because the fatality rate is so unbelievably low that why would you destroy the health of the entire country to protect against something that hardly kills anybody? But that's what I'm finding. And it goes back to this work that I did in the sleeper agent. This immune tolerance, that became the study, the life study of Eric Traub. He studied this condition his entire life, and he used what he learned to create biological weapons. And that was just kind of like, he studied that LCM virus all the way up until his death in 1985. He also worked on that mosquito-borne virus, Eastern equine encephalomyelitis. It looks like he was also running this mosquito program too at Plum Island. I talk about in my book, because there were studies later on Plum Island with these tires that dotted the landscape that were breeding mosquitoes. And so he probably was breeding them, using them in the simulant program along with ticks that he released on shorebirds. And so in 1939, when he went back to Germany, he had a student under him, like a protege named Werner Schaefer. And Schaefer, I have Schaefer in possession of these spirochetes. They were a bird spirochete, bird form of Borrelia. Lyme disease is Borrelia burgdorferi. Well, he was in possession of these spirochetes that affected birds, Borrelia anserina. Back then they were called Spirochaeta gallinarum, but it's looking like that's where it came from, because it's so close. It's so close to the Lyme disease, and it's carried by birds already. Birds, it's kind of like, it doesn't really do much to the birds. It basically burned it out. It used to be like very fatal to birds, but he started adapting it. He started modifying it, and then they were just carriers. They turned into these kind of immune-tolerant carriers of the spirochete. And they're found in all sorts of birds all over the United States. And they're also found on land animals. So it's kind of like, from what I can gather, is that he was adapting it to all sorts of new animals and then altering, you know, the proteins on it and making it so that it could be spread like all over the environment in so many different animals. And what he did was he would roll many different infections all into one, like he was learning that year in 1939. And it's funny, because the paper that his mentor published in 1939 was talking about a complex disease found in dogs that were infected by Rickettsia, Bartonella, Babesia, and he also mentioned, I think it was called trypanosoma. It's like a parasite. And what seems to have happened is it seems he switched out the trypanosoma with the Borrelia, and it was the same exact combination of things you'd find later in North America. As he talked about in that paper, how this combination of infections could create this immune tolerance, and it creates a very complex disease. So probably he was selling this idea that we could load these ticks up and it would be a vaccine against a number of different foreign animal diseases, but it looks that he was more or less trying to sabotage us, because he knows damn well what immune tolerance does long term. And he's seen it in his mouse colony, and he spent his entire life studying it. So,
yeah,
that's kind of like what it's looking like.
Well, and I'm sort of wrapping my head around this, and it sounds to me like there are a multitude of viruses that trigger this reaction that we're calling immune tolerance, right? And this,
yep,
is the real, you know, for lack of the proper term, I guess, disease, right? Is this kind of what people understand when they think of Lyme disease and these other chronic illnesses? Like the symptoms that you're getting are from this condition that's a reaction from whatever virus is set.
Well, it's brought about by this certain antigen or a protein that is found on bacteria. It's also found on viruses and it's involved in viruses. It's an antigen that they use it in many different vaccines that are out on the market today. It's like this nasty lipid or lipoprotein. And when it crashes the immune system, then you get these viruses that start reactivating and coming back on, because when your immune system is suppressed, because we have all these latent viruses that don't cause any harm. And I think a lot of them came in from all sorts of the different vaccines that we were given, from the animal tissues used. And they don't cause many problems, but when they reactivate, they definitely cause problems from head to toe. So it's kind of a similar disease. It's like you're turning the body against you, and you're waking up these dormant viruses we have within us, probably from earlier vaccines like polio. You know, like the polio vaccine was contaminated with the SV40 virus, among other things, probably. And I would bet to say that the 8 human herpes viruses that are common are probably from a lot of these things. So is the viruses are definitely involved, but all you need is this antigen or spike protein to bring it on. And there's like on Borrelia burgdorferi, the Lyme disease one, there's a outer surface protein A or OspA that is basically the same thing. And it's the same kind of like, so some of the viruses have a spike protein with the same biochemical composition. It's this nasty lipoprotein that just sends the immune system haywire. Then when the immune system goes haywire, that's when you just get all of these reactivation of these latent viruses. And a lot of times when they reactivate, it's also oncogenic or has a very high potential to cause cancer. It suppresses your P53 gene, which is something that is used to kind of keep cancer in check. And it just has a lot of different effects on the body, and then also on the brain. He noticed a lot of these viruses too, when they reactivate from latency, is that you get these neuropsychiatric disorders. So mental illness comes into play in this as well. And that's kind of like the, I would say, the mechanism too behind autism. The autism is you give these kids a vaccine like MMR. MMR is three live viruses. All three of them are dry frozen or lyophilized. And when you dry, Eric Schaub actually had been doing work with his German colleagues in World War II about how dry freezing, you can have this delayed potentiation or delayed reactivation. And it was something that was problematic. And so they were talking about how it could cause problems by dry freezing things. And that MMR vaccine that is so notorious for bringing this on, all three of them are dry frozen. And so when those reactivate, they can start destroying the brain. And that's where you start getting a lot of this autism stuff. I mean, I would say, sure, the metals aren't great. They aren't healthy. They're definitely toxic. But a lot of this has to do with this mechanism of virus reactivation and immunosuppression. And that's basically something. See, I wish like a lot of the health freedom movement would be seeing this stuff, because they focus on the aluminum, but then they don't realize that there's so much evidence documenting all this stuff that I'm talking about with this immune tolerance spectrum of disease. So it's definitely something that, you know, and today you see America is just absolutely, I mean, I have so many friends who are sick, just like me. A lot of them I met who became sick after a routine vaccine of all kinds, like pretty much any vaccine out there. I've heard of somebody getting a chronic disease after getting it. I've heard of people getting it after DTaP. I've heard of people getting it, or tetanus shots. I've heard of people getting it from Hep B vaccine. I've heard of people getting it, obviously, from the COVID vaccine. All of these things contain these nasty antigens that will bring on this immune tolerance.
Yeah. Yeah, it's something that's really difficult to convey to people who are, you know, in that comfort of, well, the hospital knows better and they are going to take care of my health. Last year had an incident where carelessly in my apartment, there was a sewing needle that just happened to be in my carpet, and I stepped on it right in the base of my heel. You know, luckily missed bone, missed blood vessel, just kind of went into the fat of my foot and then broke off. And I ended up having to go to the emergency room to get it pulled out. And, you know, they were very adamant that I get a tetanus shot and very surprised that I refused one. And they said, well, you should think about it and then come back and get one. And I'm like, okay, I'll think about it. And, you know, quite frankly, I'm glad I didn't, especially after learning this piece of information. And
definitely, yeah. I actually got a nasty cut BMX biking a few summers ago. And they were like, I had to get stitches and everything. And they were like, oh, you haven't had a tetanus shot. We need to give you a tetanus shot. And I know about all this stuff. I said, no way. So what they did was, instead, they gave me antibiotics. I'm not averse to taking those. I will take those. But the vaccines are just nasty. They contain stuff that you don't want in your body.
Stop right there. Today's show is brought to you by Gold Main Street with their incredible 420 deal. For the first 300 customers, you can fill your cart with $50 worth of high quality, legal, tested and approved THC. We're talking pre-rolls, live rosins, hash, tinctures, vapes. It's incredible. GoldMainStreet.com with the promo code CRAZY50 is filling your cart up with $50 worth of products for free. All you got to do is pay shipping. So long as you're in an applicable state, not all states are included in Gold Main Street's deal, unfortunately. But go to GoldMainStreet.com and check out their incredible catalog of THC products. And again, $50 on them. How can you beat a deal like that? That's promo code CRAZY50 at checkout. And that's that, folks. Check them out. And while you're at it, go to VibeMedX.com and check out our other sponsor, the number one supplier of SheLegit, the most legit supplement for your health. If you want to boost your immune system, give it that adaptogenic bounce back capability, testosterone boost as well. And it's not just for men, by the way. SheLegit adapts to your body. So check it out today, Vibe Med X, and learn more. I did an interview with the CEO of Vibe Med X. That's Ron Morrill. If you look up, Morit. You look up Vibe Med X in the episode description, find more, and that's that. We'll be right back to this episode of the My Family Thinks I'm Crazy podcast after a quick break to our dynamic ads. Remember, every episode of the My Family Thinks I'm Crazy podcast is ad-free and interruption-free on patreon.com/MFTIC or My Family Thinks I'm Crazy. Substack.com. Go check that out for more. Like I said, we'll be right back in a minute. This message was brought to you today by Hims. Hims.com. Listen, your family might think you're crazy, and that's okay. But don't let them think you're unhealthy. If you've got weight loss goals, we're going to help you hit them with Hims, okay? This is weight loss by Hims, designed to support you in losing the weight and keeping it off. Hims now offers access to an affordable range of FDA-approved GLP-1 medications, including Wegovy. You don't just lose the weight, you feel better. So hit those goals with Hims, with Wegovy at Hims. You can lose up to 20% or more of your body weight when combined with diet and exercise. Helps you regulate your appetite and eat less, so success is within reach. Plus, Wegovy is the first ever GLP-1 pill, so there's no needles needed. That's right, it's just a pill. So if you're ready to reach your goals, visit hims.com/crazy. to get a personalized, affordable plan that gets you. That's HIMS.com/crazy, HIMS.com/crazy. Weight loss by Hims is not available in all 50 states. Wegovy is the registered trademark of Novo Nordisk AS. To get started and learn more, including important safety information, Wegovy clinical study information and restrictions, visit HIMS.com. Yes, summer is almost here, but it's not too late to spring into style with Quince. Yes, Quince is an affordable luxury brand that sells high-quality fashion and home goods at radically low prices, direct from the factory floor. The company has pioneered a manufacturer-to-consumer retail model, and factories produce inventory on near just-in-time basis and ship their goods directly to consumers' doorsteps, cutting out financial and environmental waste. We love cutting out environmental waste on this show. And on that note about things I love the linen chore coat that I got thanks to Quince and this show. Quince hooked me up with a coupon, and they're hooking you up with a discount if you use the promo code CRAZY today at quince.com. That's Quince.com. And again, I love the linen chore jacket. It's the perfect weight. It's the perfect softness. It's great for not so warm evenings in the spring, right? You know, things are still kind of just unraveling. Summer is finally coming in up here in New England. So a nice linen chore coat is the perfect thing to keep my skin nice and safe from the hot sun, and also keep me nice and warm from the chilly air. Oh, thank you, Quince. Oh, I feel so good in my Quince linen chore jacket. Let me tell you, folks, go to quince.com and use the promo code CRAZY now to save. It's not just clothes. They have all kinds of great stuff. Check it out today. It's got the My Family Thinks I'm Crazy seal of approval. Yeah, and I understand, you know, the thought behind it for most people is that, well, you give your body a little bit of this nasty stuff so that it can process it in your immune system, and then your immune system will be better off and able to fight the disease if it actually comes into your environment, right? Which
sounds great. It sounds great in theory and all, yeah. But what happens is that it doesn't. A lot of these antigens are able to start misfolding proteins. And they're able to start making more of themselves with that protein that's misfolding. And so it doesn't really work the way they're saying, you know, because I've met so many people who got sick, like sick like me after, you know, routine vaccines, like I was telling you. And they tell people, yeah, it's just a little bit, you know, it's just a little bit. It'll bring forth an immune response and then you'll be better off. But actually, the more I look at this, there's more the evidence to show that, well, producing antibody response may not be a harmless process. Like, and it doesn't necessarily mean that you're immune to it. It's tolerizing you. So you're basically burning out your immune system more and more and more into this state of exhaustion. And then we only have one immune system. And when that's, when you overexhaust the immune system, then your health basically goes down the drain.
Yeah. Yeah. Now, this is
and that's funny because a lot of people don't realize, because a lot of people hear the word tetanus shot, they don't realize it's a vaccine.
Yeah. Yeah.
So it's good you refused that.
Yeah, I'm glad I didn't get it, and my foot did heal, so I'm fine now. But yeah, it was definitely something that, you know, my whole life I've just had this sort of stubbornness about it, call it an instinct, call it not trust people or doctors. But yeah, I'm glad I had that instinct for whatever reason. Now, let me ask you this, you know, when it comes to cures and things like that, I'm sure it's very taboo. You went to a Facebook group to find, you know, some relief, right? So it's obviously not a conventional place to get support. I mean, Facebook groups are probably a great place to find like minds, but with medical support, like most people would, again, go to a doctor and so forth. But did Truth Cures offer anything in the way of relief? Have you found any, you know, routines or dietary changes or supplements that help you get past these symptoms and boost your immune system? I mean, is there anything in the way of, I know cure is a very big word.
Yeah.
So,
I mean, I still have it, and I didn't really find that with them. I basically just kind of educated myself on what the disease is and how it works through them. They had been putting out videos. They had a video on YouTube that really explained it well, and they were talking about how Lymerix causes the same disease. Lymerix was the Lyme disease vaccine. And they talked about the Lyme disease testing and why it's insufficient and why a lot of people will be infected but yet come up negative. So they were very good when it came to learning what the disease is and how it works. But there is somebody at the moment. I'm going to be sending some of my blood to one of my friends in Japan who is a doctor and who's doing this treatment right now. His name is Kevin McCarron. And he's doing something called plasmapheresis, where he takes your blood and he filters it. And then puts it back into you, but with these stem cell growth factors, I think it is, if I'm remembering correctly. But he's having great results with all sorts of different people, like especially with vaccine injuries. He was an amyloid researcher, which is the prion diseases that I was telling you about. And he started to find a lot of people with the vaccine injuries and people that were sick with chronic diseases like mine, he was finding these amyloids in their blood. And he worked with somebody else I know named Charles Rixey, who they started doing this experimental treatment, and they've been getting really great results. It's just that it's kind of expensive to get out to Japan and do the treatment. But I think at some point I'm going to start like a fundraiser or something to try to get myself out there, because he's been having really great results so far.
Now, is there a reason why it's in Japan and not other countries?
Well, it's in America. Like it exists in America, but they don't for the most part, they just totally ignore these diseases and say there's no problem. They don't test for amyloids. They don't look at that stuff. They're basically just letting us die. I've met so many people here who live here. They've tried, like I did try to go to the medical system and see what they could do for me, but they just basically told me that I wasn't sick. They couldn't find anything wrong with me. They sent me around in circles. Then eventually I went, and the Lyme disease test they gave me at first said that I didn't have anything. But then when I went to this Lyme literate doctor that costs a lot of money, I had a different test, and that came back positive for Borrelia burgdorferi, Mycoplasma pneumoniae, reactivated Epstein-Barr virus, and reactivated human herpes virus 6, which is a common encephalitis virus. There's eight different human herpes viruses. There's, you know, there's chicken pox. There's Epstein-Barr virus is one of them. The human herpes virus 6 is like this encephalitis virus. I mean, it's not the STD. That's number 2. Herpes simplex is number 1, but they were able to find this stuff. And then, of course, it makes a lot of sense, because what they did was they raised the bar in 1994 on the Lyme disease test so that you had to make a lot more antibodies in order to test positive when the spirochetin's co-infections are often very immunosuppressive, and then you're not able to make very many antibodies. So then you're obviously going to get a negative result. But as in terms of like hope, I hope that that keeps going, and I hope that gains traction, but I still don't think our public health system will ever kind of, and over here doing that costs like way more. It's like 100 grand in America. way cheaper in Japan, but they don't really, I mean, I couldn't imagine the kind of trouble you'd have to go through to try to get that in America. I don't even know if it would be possible, but, and I don't even know when they actually would say, okay, we can do this. Like what types of diseases they would actually allow that for, if it would be for like cancers or something. But all I know is that my friend Kevin McCarron, who is in Germany, I've done some like, he does like live streams and stuff. I've done some shows with him. I've done an interview of him. It's on my Substack channel. I just think, you know, he's kind of like paving the way. I hope that this gains traction. I hope that it becomes more available for everybody. But he basically runs a site and tells you how to send the blood in. Then you send the blood in. And if he finds, he sends you like a 15-minute video telling you what he finds. And usually a lot of people will have these amyloid plaques. And then that opens up a slot for you to get treated over there. It's just that it's kind of like, it's kind of expensive, but I would say it's probably like 1/10 of the expense that it is in America.
And now, if you already went through this, but what is the treatment comprised of?
Okay, so it's like, so it takes your blood out with a tube, right? It takes your blood out and it, there's this filtering process. It's called plasmapheresis, and it filters out all of the pathogenic material and also the antibody antigen complexes where there's just antibody mixed with nasty pathogenic antigen that is kind of like just going around in your blood, and it clogs up your kidneys. So what he does is he filters that blood, and then he puts that blood back into you, and he adds something. I think it's called stem cell growth factor, not stem cells themselves, but this something that is like a byproduct of stem cells. And I think I'm right when I say stem cell growth factor, but I'm not, don't quote me on that. But then he does that until it has been done entirely, and you have blood that is completely free of all this stuff. And he's noticed a lot of the people that he's done this to, like 9 months out, he's saying, like, so it's still ongoing, but he's saying, you know, 9 months out, and he's still having people telling him that all of their nasty health problems went away and they've remained free of it.
Yeah. Wow. That's incredible. I am squeamish on the topic of blood. So the thought of getting filtered out of you is, you know, my imagination is probably running wild to, you know, the nonsensical, but still, nonetheless, sounds like something that would be expensive. So yeah, I completely understand the apprehension and the, you know, urge to maybe fundraise this. But I mean, it's something that I would say our health system is really failing people in a number of ways. And you've highlighted this as a really major way that, you know, at the very optimistic side of it, our health system is failing us. Now, if we're going to take the truth for what it is, I would argue, and I think you're making this argument, that all of this is being done not just to research, well, to research, you know, the effectiveness of these bioweapons against enemies. Who are the enemies? It sounds like the American public is the enemy, you know? And that, yeah, well,
basically, like, kind of what I said in the book was that it seems that from a very early time, an enemy of the country, an enemy of the people, began infiltrating into our public health system and turning it and taking it over slowly over the course of many years. with the intention of using it against us. I know that's kind of like a horrifying thought, but that's kind of where I'm at with this. And so basically, I did look at like the Bolshevik Revolution and everything and how they started their program and everything. And they had this. I start the book with Britain, and I show how Britain was using smallpox and a bunch of different diseases all the way. I have George Washington actually quoted on the British using smallpox against the Continental Army in 1776 or something in the beginning of the book. And then I show how Britain was probably attacking us in the 1850s and then all the way up to World War One. But then what happens is after 1918, the Soviet Union, when the Bolshevik Revolution, and I kind of look at the Bolshevik Revolution as like a British operation where they kind of installed this this government. They destroyed the Russian Tsar and then kind of helped foment this Bolshevik Revolution. And I think that they were kind of like a puppet for British intelligence, and they went really heavy into biological warfare because they thought that the 1918 influenza was a British biological weapon used against them because so many died on the Russian side. So they went really heavy into bio warfare. And they basically, they went all out because they, you know, they're not technologically advanced. So that would be something that they could do without needing a lot of money.
Yeah. Very costly.
Yeah.
Way of using weapons. I mean, you don't have to put bodies out in the field to shoot weapons or artillery or, you know, pay for planes, boats, and tanks and all, you know, the other things. So, yeah, that definitely, it, you know, it's straight out of a cartoon. You know, we have villains in their evil lairs creating bioweapons and releasing them onto the public in unsuspecting ways. Yeah, it's insidious, to say the least.
Definitely. And so there was a guy, and I'll tell you something. There was a guy in the Soviet Union who was a bioweaponeer. His name was M.P. Chumakov. And we allowed Albert Sabin from the public health system, our public health system, to team up with him to work on the oral polio vaccine. They allowed him to travel to Russia and hang out with this Chumakov guy and formulate a new vaccine with him. And then basically, it's like, okay, that guy Chumakov was actually down meeting with Eric Traub. So the Soviet Union actually captured Insel Reims at the end of World War II. They captured his lab, and then they basically hauled off the entire phase of Insel Reims research over to the Soviet Union. And he was coming down to meet with Eric Traub to gain information on this whole immune tolerance thing and LCM virus. And so he was definitely a bioweapons guy. And so his son later, M.P. Chumakov's son, Konstantin Chumakov, later got a job in America through Albert Sabin vouching for him. And he comes over while the Soviet Union's still around. Now, mind you, they were very strict about a lot of their bioweapons people. They wouldn't let them travel with like a husband and wife, right, over to America because they didn't want people defecting. Usually it would be like you'd have to keep, one would have to stay back as collateral. Well, MB Chumakov's wife was also a virologist, and they were traveling over here in the 50s, but they were definitely very high up. But MB Chumakov's son, Konstantin Chumakov, gets a job over here anyway. They just allowed him to come over here while the Soviet Union was still in power, and he got a job. First, he got a job with, I think it was either NIH or it was the National Institute of Allergy and Infectious Diseases. Then he made his way to the FDA. And at the FDA, he got a job heading Vaccine Safety and Review. So this would be a department that is in charge of looking at the safety profile of the vaccines that are being released on the market. And he actually had a hand in approving the COVID vaccines that they released in 2021. And MB Chumakov, now mind you, he was testing biological weapons in 1937 with tick-borne diseases and the whole nine yards. And he was testing them on the Muslims and Mongolians and Siberia. And what it looks like is that they started, these Bolsheviks started infiltrating us from a very early time. And I would say probably under the watch of Britain. I look at it like it was a British operation, that whole Bolshevik thing. And Britain was attacking us since the very beginning of our country. And I think this is all just a continuation of that. And I think they've taken over our public health system enough to start using it against us, start passing these policies where they're telling people who are sick that they're not sick and denying treatments and everything under the sun, even on the chemical side. Putting out a lot of chemicals on the market that are dangerous to you while saying that it's safe. So it's kind of like chemical and biological warfare.
Yeah.
And there was a book written by an ex-KGB guy named Alexander Kuzminov. It was a whole book about how they had a plan to flood the American public health system and biodefense and use it against us. I cited the book in my book. I talked about that book in my book, and I said, you know, this guy's saying that they already had this plan, so it seems to be that they implemented this plan. And that's kind of where I stand with it. Most of the people, obviously, in the public health system, in the lower, you know, like in the lower end of the spectrum, they all mean well, but they're working in a system that has been taken over. When you get up to the higher realm, when you get up to, like, you know, higher positions of power, people, when you have people like MP Chumakov's son running Vaccine Safety and Review at the FDA, I mean, that's a huge red flag. You know, to put somebody with that kind of background in a position like that, you know?
Yeah, especially considering the effects of the COVID-19 pandemic. Yeah, it's
stunning. I talked about some of these Soviet bioweaponeers. There was a guy named Ken Alibek. He wrote a book called Biohazard, and he talked about how they had this huge program to crush America. So they were like scheming with bioweapons the entire time to use against us. And when you look at MP Chumakov and who he was, and then realize that his son is actually running Vaccine Safety and Review, it's just mind boggling how that could have happened, but it did.
Yeah.
Because it's kind of like a position that would be too sensitive to put somebody with a background like that. You know what I mean?
Yeah, no, I mean, when you think about this, I mean, does the comic book cartoon villain come to mind? I mean, do you really, at the end of the day, I mean, obviously you don't think these people have our best interests in mind with these programs.
No. And you know, it's the weird part is Konstantin Chumakov, when you break that name down etymologically, it actually means constant plague. So Chum means plague in Russian. And Chumakov means of the plague. Konstantin obviously is a form of constant or unstoppable. So Konstantin Chumakov.
Wow.
But I think, you know, there are actually a lot of people named. And if you break down their name etymologically, you'll find a lot of times that it actually describes them accurately. And I don't know that it's intentional. It just happens to be synchronicity. I don't know. I mean, but I just found that so amazing because I have a friend in Russia and I was telling him about the Chumakov guy. And he said, oh, that means plague. And so I was like, wow, that's crazy.
Yeah. Yeah, that is very synchronistic.
Yeah.
Surprising considering all the things we hear on this show. Yeah, it's very fitting that a person like that would come to be in a position like that. You said he worked in the World Health Organization or the...
No, it's Food and Drug Administration, FDA.
Ah, here in the States. Wow, that's... Yeah, wow.
Yeah, like he was involved in approving all of the vaccines that would be used on Americans. So it was a big deal, you know?
Yeah.
But I will say that they did have people in the World Health Organization. And actually, it was him who was talking about it. He was giving an interview with somebody from NIH, and he was talking about a guy named Sergey Drozdov, who had a top position in the World Health Organization. And I think the World Health Organization definitely, from its inception, was compromised on, you know, Britain, the Soviet Union. Eric Traub was actually he was actually an officer of the FAO, which is the Food and Agriculture Organization, but it's under the same UN charter. It's like the World Health Organization, but it's more towards like agriculture and veterinary stuff.
Yeah. Now, I mean, this reads depopulation, right? I mean, this is what I'm concluding. Obviously, these people want to see less people on the planet, or at the very...
Absolutely. I think so. I mean...
Money off of pain and suffering.
Right. There's another part of my book in the last chapter where I talked about, like, the polio vaccine and stuff, and I talked about that guy, Jonas Salk, who wrote a book called Survival of the Wisest. I don't know if you've ever heard of that, but Jonas Salk made the inactive polio vaccine. It was the first polio vaccine that came out, and that was also contaminated by that SV40 virus. And in the 1970s, he writes this book called Survival of the Wisest, about overpopulation and how something needed to be done about it, talking about he basically said in the book how medical advances that keep life going for people is a threat because of overpopulation, hinting at that we should instead let them die. It's crazy. I have the book. I've read it. It's just wild that these people say stuff like this out in the open so boldly. I mean, they dress it up with intellectual words and whatnot to sound smart and to say it in a way where someone may not actually catch what they're actually saying. But when you break down what he's actually saying, it's horrifying. He's definitely saying that. He's definitely saying, you know, when you're saying that medical advances that keep life going for people is a threat because of overpopulation, I mean, what does that imply? That implies that we should let people die. That's what he's saying in that book. And in another part of that book, he starts talking about how we could use RNA viruses to degenerate the gene pool, which will then be tested in the process of natural selection, as he says. And it's interesting that his, well, actually, SV40 is a DNA virus, but he was talking about we could use DNA and RNA viruses to degenerate the gene pool. And that's exactly what SV40 does. That's exactly what it does, because it passes down generations. And it's kind of like Eric Tribe's LCM virus. It acts much like that. So it's and the funny thing was about him was that he actually couldn't pass a background check initially when he was going to be working to advise the U.S. government on how to deal with diseases, how to, you know, like he was advising them on how to handle a lot of the, you know, like polio. And then he created the polio vaccine. And there was the, that incident that occurred with his vaccine called the Cutter incident, where they say it wasn't inactivated properly. And it was causing people paralytic polio. All these people were getting the shots and they were getting paralytic polio from the shots, and that was a big event that happened with his vaccine. Then Albert Sabin decides to go work with MP Chumakov to make the oral polio vaccine. That vaccine, like I said, was also contaminated. And even well after 1962, they still have contamination problems with it.
Wow. Well,
and, you know, for them to say that, oh, it's not a cancer virus, it won't cause cancer, even though it's causing tumors in all of these animals and cancers in these animals. Well, there's also been plenty of papers published suggesting that it definitely is a human carcinogen as well.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, that was like what I closed my book with. And at the very end, I kind of said, like, you know, because what they did in the 1950s is they diverted all of this funding away from assessing the Soviet biological weapons threat. And they instead put it into nuclear warfare, when the Soviet Union was actually working on biological warfare, like way more intensely. And in doing that, they weren't able to assess a lot of the weaknesses in our public health system where enemies could have infiltrated it with ease, you know, with people like, so Jonas Salk, by the way, he was tripped up in the first investigation by the FBI because he was involved in all of these communist front groups. And then suddenly a second FBI investigation comes in and says, no, he's fine, probably by compromised FBI agents. So one of the things that I was told from John Loftus and his source was that the FBI was compromised with a lot of these Soviet moles, and I would say British intelligence people that were probably working with the Soviets. Like I said, the Soviet Union was kind of a product of British intelligence, in my opinion.
Mm. Yeah.
So, but that's kind of like the dynamic that I look at in my book. And Eric Traub, by the way, when his lab was captured in Germany, they were interrogating a lot of the staff. They were asking the staff, you know, did you use the animal crematory to dispose of human bodies? Because Insel Reams had forced labor, and they were probably testing out vaccines. I know Eric Traub and his protege, Werner Schaefer, were actually working on a human/avian influenza vaccine. So they were probably definitely trying it out on these humans, the forced labor there. And they probably did use them. They probably did get rid of them in the animal crematory. And so I think what they were able to probably do is find war crimes on them. Then they say, you know, oh, you can go to Nuremberg, or you can work for us and do what we tell you. And that seems to have been what happened. Because after that, they arranged this phony escape where he was able to escape to West Germany, and then with the help of British intelligence, get a job over in America and Project Paperclip. And one of the guys that was involved in getting the paperclip scientists over was a guy named Donald McLean, who was one of the Cambridge Five spies. He eventually defected to Moscow in 1951, right when Eric Traub was over here. He was like very high up in British intelligence. Also, his handler, Kim Philby, also defected. They were known as the Cambridge Five spies, but it's looking like that's what Eric Traub was doing over here in Paperclip. He was here to attack us. Now, John Loftus told me that he actually knew the guy who interrogated Eric Traub, because Eric Traub was only here for a few years, and then they sent him back to West Germany. He says he had a friend, Dan Benjamin, who interrogated Eric Traub and tripped him up in a lie. And Traub told him that, yes, I was working for the Soviet Union when I came over here, like kind of like how I laid out to you. And they sent him back to Germany, like, suddenly. And then when he's in West Germany, he heads this other bioweapons lab in West Germany. And then by 1960, he was stepping down under investigation, embezzlement. And he basically, he avoided jail time with a heavy fine. Then he went to Iran for the FAO, Food and Agriculture Organization of the UN. And he kept the job with the UN all the way up until he died. But that's kind of like what seems to have happened when he came over in Paperclip.
Yeah. Wow. He spread this research all over. And yeah, I mean, it's incredible the lengths that this goes. And I really appreciate your work and your research to help dig this information up. Hopefully it will lead to people finding some veracity to all this, and then people can treatment in a legitimate way, you know, without having to go and travel internationally. John Loftus, his book America's Nazi Secret, gets in a lot of that stuff. It's available on the same website your book is available, trineday.com. If you there and search The Sleeper Agent, they'll find your book available now. So thanks again, Adam, for joining us today. Anything in conclusion that you'd like to say?
I mean, all I'd really say is that, you know, people are waking up and starting to realize that the world doesn't work the way they thought that it did, and that there's a lot of nonsense going on. And everyone kind of has to do their own research. I kind of, you know, I've told people in the past, I've been doing this for a while, is that, you know, you won't always get the truth from the alternative media either. Like, so even though everybody knows, a lot of people know anyway, that the mainstream media lies, that there's also, they do also take hold of the alternative media as much as they can. And you really, there's so many things where I've had to look into myself and found that both sides were wrong. And it's the kind of thing where everybody has to kind of do their own research, and it's like a full-time job too. I mean, there's so much stuff going on right now, but, and I know a lot of this is not very nice to hear. A lot of it is unsettling information, but I think that the more that people know about it and the more people become aware of stuff like this, then the less we have to actually worry if we deal with it head on than to just stuff our heads in the sand like some ostriches and pretend that it's not there, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. Awareness is key, and that's why authors like yourself are invaluable, and we definitely appreciate all the work you do on a show like this. So thanks again, man. I'm going to link the episode description up with your book, and anything else you'd like me to share with the audience, please send it to me. But yeah, thanks again, Adam. Adam Finnegan, The Sleeper Agent, The Rise of Lyme Disease, Chronic Illness, and the Great Imitator, Antigens of Biological Warfare. Check out the book at tryingday.com. And thanks again for joining me. Until next episode, nurse yourself in the moment, wherever you are in the moment.